if there was an American sound starting to materialize in the 30s and 40s and later in the 50s, probably it's because of that extraordinary French woman, Nadia Boulanger. All of the great composers really went over to Paris and had their time at the feet of this extraordinary woman. And, you know, whether it was Roy Harris or Margaret Bonds went over and apparently Miss Boulanger said, "Darling, you have your voice. Simply go forward. Do what you do. Be who you are. There's nothing I can do." So apparently her mandate was to help composers find their voice. And Copland was deeply influenced by his colleagues of Pistons and Sessions and whatever else in the academic music and trying to find the right words and write the... And it apparently, I mean, I don't mean to put words into that magnificent story, and I have boundless admiration for Copland, but clearly something happened where Copland simply said, "But I hear it this way." And she must have said, "Then write it that way." And then we have this miracle of Aaron Copland. Now, that's not to say that some of the less known pieces of his of the early 20s by Aaron Copland, which are deeply experimental in their musical sound elements and structure, are incredibly important and interesting. But it's the other Copland that remains in our consciousness. People like Blitzstein and Bernstein didn't write so many songs as they wrote theater pieces and instrumental pieces. When they did write anything to do with words, they were usually either writing their own words or finding words that had some social impact, had some sort of edgy other side of the story. You know, curious that in the 50s, those composers and their group, and actually probably even Broadway theater, was probably challenging the idea of the American dream life before anybody else was. So they were already making fun of it. They were already seeing the infrastructure of the internal family as goaded and bloated by the newfound television world to be completely bonkers, and that humans are far more complex than that and usually live with very dark secrets and yada, yada, yada. So it's a very volatile time. And then you have people like Samuel Barber, who just were in their own language of the romantic style, if you will, still believing that music, however adventurous in its harmonic language, remained completely in a cadential diatonic anchor. This was not very popular at the time. It was more popular with the public, but it was deeply criticized by the academics and intellectuals. Again, that can all be another story. And actually, I want to offer that I've said a couple of times, that's another story, that's another story, that's another story. That's one of the miracles of talking about American culture, is that you can go down whatever path you want. And I would maintain, if I may, that the Walter Arlen émigré, and especially anchored in the émigré world of Los Angeles of the 30s and the 40s and into the 50s, is a fascinating subject in and of itself. We only barely tipped on it in the Song of America series. Forgotten masterpieces and cultural legacy that just got rolled under the advancing ship of democratic success, and forgotten histories of Jews and Europeans chased from their homeland. It's a horrible time, but it gave us some of the most amazing musical paradoxes, if you will. We can't obviously talk about this time without getting into the world of Hans Eisler. And Hans Eisler is truly one of the great European immigrants thrown out of America, gave us some of the most important literature of song in America. The Hollywood Songbook is just an amazing collection. If you want to talk about a diary of existence seen through poetry and music, pick up the Hollywood Songbook.